So our topic for today, looking ahead to Purim, is Vinahafochu, a history of Purim practices overturning the natural and social order. We'll understand what that means in a couple of minutes, because I've been here a couple of times, but in case I'm not familiar, I'm Shlomo Zuckier. I research Jewish history and teach in a couple of different places, and I'm excited to be back here. And so looking ahead to Purim, we're going to think about some Purim practices from a historical perspective, maybe also frame it a little bit hashkafically. And really, it all goes back. It all starts with the theme of Vinahafochu in the Megillah. Of course, as we all remember, the story of the Megillah is one of unexpected results, where everything is overturned, is topsy-turvy, where things go from yagon to simcha, from expected suffering, expected debacle to great victory. And I just highlighted here in the first few sources some of the psukim that show this transition. So it goes from, in Parak Gimel of Esther, we hear about Haman's nefarious plan, and he convinces the king to do whatever he wants. He writes the Sofrei HaMelech, the king's scribes, Vayikasev Kechol Asher Tziva Haman. They write whatever Haman says, which is, and then they send out these letters, Liashmid La'arogu Abed Eskol HaYehudim, to destroy, to kill all the Jews. That's sent out with the official Pashegen HaKesav, the Ratzim, everyone. They do the king's bidding, and here they're doing Haman's bidding. And then just a few prakim later, after a couple of evening parties and changing the king's mind, we find in Perek Ches that, number one, Haman falls into the bad graces of the king. Hinei ves Haman nasati l'Esther. Esther receives Haman's house. And not only that, the king says, write for the Jews, write these new laws, whatever the Jews want. And so the scribes of the king write with the same exact language, Vayikareu Sofrei HaMelech, Vayikasev Kechol Asher Tziva Mordechai. They do everything Mordechai says, totally overturning from Haman to Esther and Mordechai. And what's the new law? Lihikahel v'la'amod al nafsham. The Jews are able to defend themselves, not to be wiped out, but to fight back. Liashmiv la'arog la'abedes kol chel amum dina atzorimosam. To destroy their enemies, rather than being destroyed themselves. Again, the Pashegen Aksav, the Ratzim, all of the government infrastructure is applied to now save the Jews rather than destroy the Jews. And the theme here, it totally inverts the expected story. It uses the same exact language, but instead of Haman, it's Mordechai and Esther. Instead of destroying the Jews, it's saving the Jews. The highlight of this in source 3, Vayisluas Haman ala Eitz Asher Yichin Mordechai. Mordechai was supposed to be killed, to be hanged, and instead, it's Haman who's hanged. And the Megillah, reflecting on the Purim story, makes this point itself. It says that what happened is Vinahafochu, it was overturned. Asher Yishlatu Ayudim Hema Bisonehem. Instead of the Jews being ruled by those who hate them, instead the Jews ruled over those who hated them. And a few psukim later, we celebrate this. Ve'achodesh Asher Ne'epach Lehem Miyagon L'Simcha Umei Evel L'Yom Tov. We celebrate this month, this time, that goes from agony to happiness, from mourning to a holiday. That's what Purim is all about, this extreme inversion. Everything looks like it's going one way, actually really bad, and then it gets turned over, it gets totally overturned, totally inverted, and ends up being salvation of the Jews. This all, I think, is probably not so new to all of you, but it's just a helpful frame as we now will look at the different ways that this is understood and the different ways this is applied throughout Jewish history. First, one theme in Kabbalistic sources in particular that draws on this idea of everything being overturned from the Tikkuni Zohar and much quoted, it's the connection between Purim and Yom Kippurim, right? Which, of course, actually is a different word. Kippur means atonement. It doesn't literally mean like Purim, but that's the drasha, the Kabbalistic interpretation of the Tikkuni Zohar. So I'll just read it here in Source 5. Purim is Kirias al Shem Yom HaKippurim. Purim is so called based on Yom HaKippurim. Why? De asidin le'is angabe le'shinuye le'me'inui le'oneg. Because in the future, meaning right, Yom Kippurim was so named because in the future there would be this day, Purim, where the Jews would celebrate and would change from inui to oneg. Note also the play on words there. Inui and oneg sound very similar, right? To go from inui, from suffering, like Yom Kippur is all about suffering, to oneg, to joy, right? When is there a bigger suda than on Purim? And when is there a smaller suda, I guess you could say, than on Yom Kippur itself, right? Of course, we don't eat on Yom Kippur. It's the exact opposite, and that's this idea of overturning, of flipping something on its head completely, the Purim and Yom Kippurim. That's the original source, the earliest source connecting Purim and Kippurim, and it's about this idea of l'shanuyele, to overturn, to invert something, two opposites. And source 6, we're not going to read it inside. It mentions a couple of other parallels between Yom Kippur and Purim, this idea of the goral, the lot, whether it's the lot in the Megillah that Haman, sets, or the goral in the Beis HaMikdash on Yom Kippur, which of the goats will be La Hashem, which will be La Azazel. Things are out of our hands. Things are beyond Hashem, and Hashem can flip it one way or the other. Are we the goat that's going to go to Hashem, or are we the goat that's going to go off the cliff? Are the Jewish people going to be killed or saved? It's all in the hands of goral, which of course here is understood as Hashem controlling that goral. And also this idea that on Yom Kippur we say lifnei Hashem titaru, we're before Hashem. That's how we achieve kapara. We somehow reach this higher spiritual level. Yom Kippur, even though it's the opposite, it's not removing oneself from the physical, it's through engaging in the physical, we can also reach that higher spiritual level. So some of the irony here is Yom Kippurim and Purim, despite being opposites, also actually have the same goal, the same overriding theme of recognizing Hashem, connecting to Hashem. This is a much stated Kabbalistic idea. I just thought we'd start with that. But now let's get into some history proper. So one common practice that people have in many different communities is to have the Purim spiel, the Purim Rav, in various ways. Here's a quote, just one example of this. In the celebrated yeshivot of Telz and Valazhin, the students would elect a Purim rabbi, right? A Purim Rav. The rabbi was king of the yeshiva. He would don a long silk coat, put a girdle around his waist, fur edged cap on his head, whiskers and side locks, exactly like the actual rabbi or Rosh Yeshiva of the year. At the Purim feast, the real Rosh Yeshiva would sit at the table like an ordinary yeshiva bacher and listen to the pilpul of his pupil. A little wordplay there too. The chant and form of the Purim pilpul were like those of every day, but the substance and content was a burlesque on the entire daily routine of the yeshiva. All the weaknesses of the Rosh Yeshiva and his aides were mocked by the pupil. The latter would clearly see what regard his students held as erudition and management. Occasionally, the Rosh Yeshiva had to listen to the costly criticism of himself, would grin good-naturedly and bear it. So there's many, many Purim spiels in the classical yeshivas of Lithuania. A lot of that came over to America. YU has a Purim spiel. I was lucky enough to be involved in that a few different years. If you don't believe me, you can find the YouTube videos. But Purim, this is one of the classic things that happens on Purim. I think a lot of shuls now have Purim spiels in different ways, varying quality. I'm not going to weigh in on any specifics. But this is a long time honored tradition in Judaism. And what's the idea of the Purim spiel, right? It's inverting the usual order. Instead of the Rosh Yeshiva giving the shir and the Talmidim sitting and listening quietly, instead you take one of the Talmidim, probably not the most rabbinic one of the Talmidim. You take the Talmidim who knows how to make a good joke, who has a good time, and put them at the head of the yeshiva. And the Rosh Yeshiva instead is in the place of the students. So this idea, and also there's Purim Torah, there's an idea of saying Purim Torah, of giving a Dvar Torah, but flipping it just a bit. I remember hearing in Yeshivat HaRetzion, in the Gush, Rav Lichtenstein would always give a Purim Torah, Purim night. It happened to be more Talmudic than the usual Purim Torah. I remember him giving a shir about, we say in Shir HaMalos, in Messianic times, Az Yimale Sfok Pinu. Ushonenu Rina. Right then, in those days, our mouths will be full of laughter, and our tongues will be full of song. So he said, "Well, what's the shear? How much happiness is considered our mouth being full? Is it melo lugmav? Is it a revius?" So he gave a whole halachic shear about that. That's maybe a more tame Purim Torah, and of course there are Purim Torahs that get a little more wild than that. But we'll suffice with a very tame example for now. So this whole tradition of of dressing up a student as the rabbi is meant to invert the usual hierarchy. Of course, we all know about dressing up more generally on Purim, right? I'm not going to poll the audience and ask who still dresses up these days, but I'm assuming, you know, most of us had at least at some point in our lives dressed up on Purim. So this practice of dressing on Purim goes back. This is not an American invention. It goes back a long time. And just a quote from an article about dressing up on Purim, which points to a really interesting quote from a student of the Baal Shem Tov that I think will give some color to this practice. He says, they tell about one of the students of the Baal Shem Tov, he would say, it's a mitzvah to obey and dress up on Purim. Actually, I'll read the Hebrew. The English translation is there. What's the point? Why do you do this? V'zo mida gedola. This is a great thing. Ki al yedekach lo nikar shua bifnei dal. You can't tell the difference between someone rich and someone poor. Everyone's dressed up, right? We don't know who's who. We don't know, and maybe someone's even wearing a mask. We don't even know who the people are, and we certainly don't know their social status. V'lachin kavu bepurim mitzvahs mishloach manos. We have this mitzvah mishloach manos. Everyone gives gifts to everyone, right? It's not that you only, usually, we give tzedakah or gifts to those who need the gifts. But on Purim, everyone gives gifts to everyone. Ki rak b'sha'a she'abrios mechupasim esher l'kayim mitzvahs tzedakah kitikuna. Only when people are dressed up and you don't even know if the person you're giving to is poor, that's when you can fulfill the mitzvah of tzedakah properly. Why? Ki ha'adam eni odea az l'mihu nosein. You don't know who you're giving to. The ena mekabel yodei mimihu mekabel. The person who's receiving doesn't know who they're getting it, the money or the gift from. Ve'atamonea busha min hazakuk l'manas basar v'adam. You're removing the shame from this need for receiving presents from others. So what the student of the Baal Shem Tov says is the ideal form of tzedakah, and this draws on the Rambam a little bit, discussing the different levels of tzedakah. The Rambam says the best form of tzedakah in terms of the parties is if you don't, neither party knows who the other one is. So, you know, an anonymous giver gives to an anonymous recipient, that's ideal. And the student of the Baal Shem Tov suggests that's what happens on Purim. We all dress up, we don't really know who's who, maybe you wear a mask, and we give shalach manos. So, you know, we're probably, along the way, the poor are being supported without any of the associated shame. So that gives one nice perspective on that. Of course, more broadly, the result of people dressing up is we don't know who's who, right? So you have, speaking from personal experience, you have little girls who dress up as a queen, right? So, right, I mean, as far as I know, my 7-year-old doesn't have, you know, the power of a queen, but, you know, for one day, she can be Queen Elsa or whatever the case may be, right? And it's inverting the social hierarchy. Or sometimes, I think not most shuls around here, but some shuls, the rav dresses up, right, to sort of become a different character, to not to invert the social hierarchy. So this idea of, usually we have, you know, okay, these are the serious people, these are the higher people, these are the lower people, older, younger. That all gets thrown to the wind. That all gets mixed up on Purim when we dress up. And maybe I should have tried to track down some paintings or drawings. There's a long-standing history of dressing up on Purim. There's this really fascinating article here I gave a few citations from, giving a history of Purim in the Dutch Atlantic. So, right in Suriname and Curacao, where in the 18th and early 19th century, where the Dutch trading companies, including many Jews, many Spanish, Portuguese, and other Jews who were through that, worked through that, they had all sorts of colonies in the New World, including in the northern parts of South America. And apparently, Purim was very important to them. So this is source 9. Just a few, get a little picture of what the Purim celebration was like. Scholar, Aviv Ben Ur, writes, the Jewish holiday of Purim, as celebrated in Suriname and Curacao in the 18th, early 19th centuries, was neither a private occasion nor limited to Jews. So, okay, that's already interesting, much broader than just a Jewish celebration. Instead, Jews and Christians, along with the enslaved and manumitted peoples who outnumbered them, participated in public holiday revelry with abandon. Okay, so here we're expanding. We usually tend to think of Purim as a very Jewish holiday. This is one particular historical circumstance, it became a whole communal holiday. In Surin and Purim lasted nearly a week, and sometimes longer. Okay? So crowds of mass Jews, young and old, poured into the streets, yelled out obscene declarations against Christianity. Okay? You can sometimes say things on Purim that you wouldn't say otherwise. Maybe, I don't know if that's advised or ill-advised, but that's what they did. Surrounding them were bands of field slaves pulling wagons laden with costumed Jews and their domestic bondsmen. Sometimes the bondsmen circled the masquerading Jews, shouting and singing through the streets. Intoxicated Jewish men dressed up as armed soldiers, sailors, even Maroons or Indians. Women donned men's clothing. We'll get to that in a couple of minutes. This was a whole celebration that they would have, much beyond the technical holiday of Purim, right? They did it for a whole week. Purim is not supposed to be more than one day, maybe 2 days if you count walled cities, and 3 days if it happens to be a year of Purim Mishulash. This year, maybe you can do a Purim Katan for a couple days, but right, it's not supposed to be a week long. But they took it even further in the spirit of Purim. There, and this historian tracked down all these incidents of issues that came up in the community that they took note of. So different commotions. She points to 6 separate incidents of commotion during the reading of the Megillah registered in the communal minutes over this 47-year period. So conflicts between individuals. People started fighting each other on Purim. Someone slapped the other across the face. Okay? People called each other names. Hopefully this is not the sort of thing that happens every day. And again, not endorsing this. But this is some of the things that happened in this community on Purim. And also points to recorded cases of synagogue disruption during Purim that involved crowd behavior. So apparently in 1777, there was a pandemonium during the recitation of Megillas Esther in the Bracha V'Shalom Synagogue and the Tzedek V'Shalom House of Worship in these different communities. And I'll read the quote. Worshippers had struck the benches with hammers, clubs, and other hard objects. Why were they doing that? Haman, right? Boo, right? You make some noise. They were banging the benches with hammers, preventing others from hearing the Megillah recitation by the cantor, as mandated by Jewish law, and damaging the synagogue furniture. Right? They had to replace the benches. So, if you're complaining about too much noise in your shul, it was nothing compared to what was going on in Suriname a few hundred years ago. The regents therefore outlawed the beating of Haman, permitting only self-striking instruments, such as clappers, appointed fathers, teachers, and children's tutors responsible for preventing raucous content. Okay, so people really get carried away. It's not a new thing. People really get carried away during the reading of the Megillah. Of course, there's this tension, as was noted here. On the one hand, you want to really get into the Purim spirit and erase the name of Haman. On the other hand, you're supposed to actually hear the Megillah. So, some tension in the community. They resolved it the way that they resolved it. And then it also talks about, I didn't include a quote from this, but this person tracked down a bunch of slaves, of course, right back 200 plus years ago in these colonies, there was a lot of slave labor. I think she found 8 different slaves whose names were Purim. Apparently that was a common thing that you would name someone after the day they were born. And if someone was born on Purim, maybe they would be called Purim, and all these different stories about them. Also, slaves seem to have celebrated Purim. And you see this, it sort of overturns the natural order, right? During the year, most of the time, you have free people, you have slaves who are subordinate to them, but Purim may be allowed for some playing with that, some breaking of that that social structure that people had. So much for inverting the social order. Of course, there's a lot more. Of course, there's many stories you can tell. I'm sure many people here even have stories, but let's move to our next category, which is inverting the halachic order. So sometimes what's being inverted is not just social structures of teacher and student, or free enslaved, or whatever else, or respected and non-respected, old, young. Not just the social order, but even the halachic order historically has been inverted on Purim. Now this goes back. This specific discussion goes back to a tshuva of the Mari Mintz in the 16th century that gets picked up by the Shulchan Aruch, by the Rama and major poskim. And he talks about this practice we mentioned before, al dvar levishas hapartsufim shenoagim lilbosh bachurim v'gam besulos, zekenimim ne'arim bepurim. What are partsufim? Literally means faces, but what does that mean? You wear a face. It's a mask, right? People would wear masks on Purim. And not only that, also they would, of course, get dressed up. And what's the what halachic issue might there be with wearing masks and getting dressed up? Depending what, right, as we said before, women might wear men's clothes, men might wear women's clothes. This is potentially a beged isha, or lo yilbash gever simas isha, or lo yechli gever al isha, right? A men and women wearing each other's clothes, which is generally prohibited. So the Mari Mint says about this wearing masks and wearing clothes, it's not, and you can't necessarily distinguish men from women. He says there's no problem with that on Purim. He says partially because it's eino miskaven, there's no intent to dress based on the other gender. It's more just you want to get into the Purim spirit. You're doing something fun. He points to that, and then we'll read the second half of the second paragraph here in source 10. Odnim sabetshuva shekasav Rabbeinu Tuvia b'shem Riva. He quotes an earlier authority. Shekol machol shechotvim habachurim mishum simchas Purim. If the young men grab food out of their celebration of Purim, let's say you're at a Purim Suda with a bunch of yeshiva guys, let's say, and you know someone's about to eat or someone has their food and someone else grabs it and eats it themselves. Some scenario like that. Afilu shelo b'shus, even without permission, mishas mikra megillah, ad sof sudas Purim, from the time you read the Megillah, Purim night, until the Purim Suda, the next night, usually, right, late in the afternoon to the evening of the Purim day, shehem shtei leilos v'yom echad, that whole period, right, Purim night, Purim day until the night, two nights in a day. Ein ba mishum gazel. That doesn't count as stealing. If you steal your friend's food and eat it on Purim, it doesn't count as stealing. The ein lahazminam lebezin al kafa. You can't take them to court for this. Uvilvad shelo yasu shelo kahokin al pituvia ir on lashon. As long as you don't go against the town's elders, the tuvia ir. Right. If the town has some rules about stealing on Purim, then that's a problem. But in terms of halacha, it's okay. There's no prohibition against, part of your Purim fun, grabbing something, grabbing food and eating it, not prohibited on Purim. And so he explains this. Harishakazim shemizmana niskar, ein bo mishum gazel, it's not stealing. Avol kodem lachain, but if it's before that, let's say before Purim night, o acha v'chein achar kain, or after the Purim suit is over, after Purim's over, yesh bo mishum gazel v'over lo sigzol, then it's stealing, right? But Purim itself, you're exempt from this prohibition of stealing, as long as you're doing it as part of the Purim fun. You're not taking in order to steal. It doesn't count. It's not an act of stealing, right? How would you define that? If someone grabs the food from someone else at a meal and eats it in Purim, that's not stealing. That's a Purim celebration. So it doesn't count halachically as stealing, right? It's not doing ligzol laharviach. You're not trying to like make money off them by taking their thing. He says similarly for the masks, wearing masks or wearing other clothing of the other gender, that wouldn't be an issue. The goal isn't niyuf, isn't to infiltrate the other gender and in an inappropriate way. It's just to enjoy Purim. Just like we don't make an extra gzera not to, stay away from this. We don't make that gzera by stealing, grabbing something. We also don't make that extra gzera by dressing differently. Now this gets brought down by the Ramah in Source 11. The Ramah sort of sneaks it in a halacha totally unrelated. The Shulchan Aruch says, Mutter Lisa Isha B'Purim. It's permitted to get married on Purim. The Ramah says, okay, I'll tell you a different halacha. So he says, on the 14th or the 15th, you can get married. The Kol Shekein Mutter Lasos Pidyon Ben. You can definitely make a Pidyon Ben on that date. And then he throws in this totally unrelated halacha. Umash Enagu Lubosh Partsufim B'Purim. This practice of wearing masks on Purim, right? Of course, the Mari Mintz wasn't making this up. This was a common practice to wear masks on Purim in Ashkenaz. The Gever Lovesh Simlas Isha, the Isha Kli Gever, right? Men and women wear clothes of the opposite gender. Ein Isser V'Davar. There's no prohibition. Me'achar She'ein Mechavin Elo Simcha Be'alma. They're only intending to have joy, to have a good time, not to carry out the prohibition. V'chein, and now there are my ads. V'chein Be'lvishas Kil'ayim D'Rabbanan. Also, kil'ayim, right? Wearing forbidden mixtures. Shatnez, there's different levels of shatnez. Sometimes it's your d'orais of shatnez, sometimes it's the rabbanan. He says, shatnez, kil'ayim d'rabbanan, permitted on Purim. Apparently, this was also a practice. People would wear kil'ayim d'rabbanan. So there's an interesting article in tradition that argued that maybe it's like, maybe because Mordechai would wear the boots And that's, right, that's the linen. And so maybe it was somehow modeled after the clothing of Mordechai and the clothing of the Kohen Gadol. Maybe that's why people have this minhag. But for whatever reason, people did this. There must be, it's not usher if you're wearing it as part of the Purim celebration. That then, it's not prohibited. That's the main view. V'yesh omrim de usher. Some people say it is prohibited. Aval minhag kesfar rishona. Our practice is like the first view, that it's permitted to wear shatnez derabanan on Purim. Anyone ever see that practice? I don't think so. I think it's pretty dead, that practice. But okay, at one point, this was a major practice in Ashkenaz. He said, derech simcha, people grabbing things from each other as part of, as happiness, right, as part of like joking around. So he follows, he quotes the Mari Mintz and adds a detail himself. I'll just add, because I think we said that shatnez derabanan no one does. I think in terms of dressing, cross-dressing, I've seen that happen on Purim. It's actually machlokas. Sfaradim prohibit, Ashkenazim generally permit, but definitely some people do that. Has anyone seen grabbing or stealing things on Purim and eating? Okay, but just because you haven't seen it, I'm assuming it still happens in some places. But actually, I have a story of this myself. I'm not going to mention any names. But one of my rebbeim, who's a fairly respected Rosh Yeshiva, one year on Purim, at the Purim Suda, you know, people were having a good time playing around, whatever, and he ripped my shirt. He ripped my shirt. So I said, Rebbe, I need you to paskin for me. If someone rips someone else's shirt on Purim, Derech Schok is part of the Purim celebration, are they chayev or not? I said, but you can't answer my shiloh right now because you're drunk. You're not allowed to paskin when you're drunk. So he said, you know what? You don't even need a paskin. This person, whoever did it, referring to himself, is exempt. So these things can happen, not necessarily with food, but I actually kept that ripped shirt for a while as a testament to this halacha, but I think I lost track of it now. But in any event, these things can happen, and it's halacha on the books that, and even got paskined, whether or not that was an official psak, that these halachos apply, all these leniencies. Now, what is this? How do we understand this phenomenon, right? Usually, we don't wear kilayim. Usually, we don't yilbash gever simlas isha. Usually, we don't steal things or rip things from each other. Where is this coming from? The idea is, in the interest of having a joyous time on Purim, we relax things, and not only do we relax it, they have a minhag davka. People have a minhag precisely to do what's usually prohibited, to wear shatnez derabanan, right? That it's not necessarily more fun, as far as I can tell, to wear shatnez derabanan. You're doing it to show sometimes we can flip a halacha on its head. We don't need to keep, of course, in general, first of all, it's only derabanan. This wouldn't be for a deraisa, and it's certainly not for the rest of the year. But on Purim, sometimes even the halachic order can get flipped on its head. Of course, with limitations, right? No one's saying that you can murder on Purim. Actually, we're going to get to that in a few minutes. Questions of killing on Purim and how to understand. But that presumably would not be, it's not on this list of things that are allowed. But some things, sort of borderline cases, it's not, you're not really doing the Isser, you're celebrating. But if, because it's Purim, because this idea of inverting, of overturning the natural order, there's some room, some openness to doing things that are usually prohibited. Okay. And now, that being said, there's also some opposition to this practice, which we saw already in the Ramah himself. He said some prohibit kilayim derabanan, and he discussed in greater length in source 12 here, in Darchei Moshe, which is his longer commentary, not his shortened code. And so we'll read source 12. We'll read parts of this source. After shemat mizeh nispashin amina glulbosh kilayim derabanan bepurim, but osin l'simcha. Somehow, this kilayim on Purim is part of this happiness, part of this celebration. We see that you can override a doraisa by the stealing, right? Stealing would be a doraisa, so presumably you could also do the same for only a durabanan of kilayim. But then he says, it's not so simple. I'm the ma'isi, the ma'ari, be'rin, shekara tagar ala minag. Shalavisha's kilayim. He critiqued this minhag of wearing kilayim because of yesh tolan atzman b'tshuvas riva. Because of delek lemechash leisur gezel mishum simcha. The lav milsa. Some people say it's not prohibited because it's for enjoyment. That's not true. Demamo nitan lemechila. Dehefker bezin efker. Masha inkin beisur. Okay, maybe you can say that if you damage someone's stuff, that's a mechila, right? Everyone knows you go to a Purim party. If someone steals your sandwich, you were mochel that. You gave up. You're okay with that. That's That's what perm suitors are. You go to a perm suitor, you're saying, if you steal my thing, that's okay. But that shouldn't allow you to wear shatnez. That's an issur drabanan. You can't be mochel shatnez. You can't say, okay, you know, I'm not gonna mind that you wear shatnez. That doesn't work. It's still usher to wear shatnez. So how can you allow this on Purim? Vishamati mi'avim marizal shayam moche be'osan aloshim kilayim v'chein ani noeg achrav. So the Rama quotes this other posik who says that you shouldn't wear kilayim on Purim. Maybe this is why the minhag didn't continue. There's some strong opposition, and then he goes on back and forth, and you know, compares it to wearing the masks, etc. The last line, the Rama himself, Aval tov lahachmir v'lavad Hashem b'simcha v'liyos gila b'rada. Right, it's preparable, even though he said in the code, in the mappa, in the Shulchan Aruch, he said that we allow wearing shatnez. He says it's preferable not to. It's preferable to be stringent and serve Hashem with happiness while simultaneously being happy while trembling, meaning not to get too out of hand, to always have some yiras Hashem, to have some fear of Hashem, to not go too far and wear shatnez, even shatnez derabanan, on Purim. So we see a little bit a tempering of this idea, and the Shla, a couple centuries later, or a century later, 17th century, the Shla goes a bit further in rejecting or pushing back on some of these practices. And so he starts off here in source 13. He says, "Umatzasi kasev." He quotes the Mata Moshe, "Ve'afos and ha'mishtakrim." Those who get drunk, yeah, kavanasal m'shem shemayim. Their intent should be for the sake of heaven. It shouldn't be you get drunk on Purim to have a good time. You should be. If you're drinking on Purim, it should be for the sake of heaven. They lizkor anes shabbat b'mishnei yayin, to remember and commemorate the miracle of Purim, which, as we said, right, what happens between Perek Gimel and Perek Ches, that things go from bad to good? A bunch of parties, right? It's through the parties, it's through the a couple of alcoholic parties that the miracle happened. We commemorate that with the Suda, but you shouldn't do it for the wrong reasons. People who drink just to fill their throat. These people who drank too much, they went too far. A lot of people on Purim joke around too much. They're too lightheaded. They miss out on davening. Right? This is always a challenge. If you have your Purim Suda before Mincha, how are you going to daven Mincha? If you have your Purim Suda later in the day, how are you going to daven Marv? So the Shla points to this challenge. Says a lot of people miss out on davening. The other Abba, Mirimin Kolos Bishazat Tfilo Kriyas Megillah, and they scream during davening or leaning. Uma'arbim Achazan, and they confuse the Chazan. Right, so he knew what was going to happen in Suriname a century later, and in many other shuls. Adki Kolos Leishama, you can't hear the Chazan leaning. Gamba Achlam, when they eat, Libam Veinam Sham Samamadaneim, they're really focused on the food. Belonasa Resortion, they didn't even pick up their head. Right, you're supposed to have a nice communal suda. They're so busy eating, they didn't even look up. And they didn't look up not to their friends. Lo yibitu ha'olam ha'elyon asher Hashem elokei Yisrael bo. They didn't even see Hashem. They don't look up. They're so busy looking down at their food. They don't recognize Hashem. Lo yechushu lo nefilas yadayim, lo berchas hamotzi, lo berchas hamazon. They don't wash their hands. They don't say hamotzi. They don't bench. Aki nidme l'rov hamon shebishnei yomim elo hutter l'cho adam lifrok ol Torah u'mitzvos me'elav. It looks like on Purim that you cancel the Torah for 2 days. Right? It's like a 2 day rumspringa. That's what people think on Purim. You know, you drink a lot, you eat a lot, you don't need a daven, you don't need to say brachos, nothing. Don't need to keep the Torah, just enjoy yourself. That's what people think, looking based on what people do. This is a very strong critique by the Shla. V'cho amar be'lios meshuga, harei ze meshubach. Right? The crazier, the better. V'cho ze b'li safek rav amar hu avon pli. This is a terrible thing. Kilo hutar lanu rak simcha. We're allowed to be happy. Lo schok v'kalas rosh. Not lightheadedness. Not complete joking around. V'cho amivat al tefila v'ein roshomei amikra megillah. Mila b'mila harei zechotei mischayv b'nafsho. If you skip davening, if you miss a word of laning, mischayv b'nafsho. Right? You owe your life. This is a horrible thing. V'yavshar l'kol asher b'shem Yisrael yichune. Lifrok me'elav omach v'shomayim matul sha'achas. And this is his principle here. Anyone who's a Jew can't throw off the yoke of heaven for a moment. Meaning, even if Purim has some joy, has some things a little different than usual, it can't come at the expense of seeing oneself as an Eved Hashem, as serving Hashem. And maybe I'll just look at the next source quickly, and then I'll take a couple of questions. A couple of paragraphs later in the Shla, he specifically quotes the Ma'ari mint that we saw. Demutter lilbosh partsufim l'shanos big day. You can wear masks. You can wear your clothes. Change your clothes. Big day isha. man's woman to man's clothes, man can wear women's clothing, v'chein lehefech, and vice versa. Me'achar she'en miskavin ala simcha ba'alma, they're just trying to have joy, just trying to have a good time. Huad din levishas climb derabanan, also climb derabanan, people do. Aval ani omer, I say against the Mari Mintz, lav mishnas chasidim hu. This is not the proper practice of the pious. V'shomer nafsho yerchak mizeh. And someone who's watching their soul, guarding their soul, should stay away from this. Lilbosh kilayim, to wear kilayim, to wear, right, the shatnez. Afilo derabanan, o lachtof mechaber shlo rishis, or steal things without permission. Kizeu simchas holilus. This is a joy of being wild. That's not appropriate. Karkasavnu lismoch besimcha shel mitzvah. We should be happy with doing mitzvahs, not with being wild. So we've seen this debate over these various minhagim, mostly of Ashkenaz, to allow some leniency for the breaking of these halachos. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? But either way, this practice, certainly from a historical perspective, whatever you think about it, whether you go with the Ramah permitting it, or the Shlat really not liking it, or even Sfardim, who outright prohibit some of these, we see that this was the practice. This is Jewish people. These menagim sprouted up because of this idea of overturning not only the natural and the social order, but even overturning the halachic order to some limited degree. And that's, of course, why it's controversial, but also why it represents what Purim is about. Yeah.
So, the shalos question seems to be really very powerful. I mean, Purim is very un-Jewish. I mean, we do things very formally. Halacha is war, rules are very firm. It just undoes the whole thing.
Okay, so look, it's clear that it's building on this idea of Anafochu in the Megillah. I think Purim, more than any other holiday, I can't speak to what happened and how much it overturned. I mean, that sounds like something you have to really like know what's going on in Shemayim to know exactly what shifted where. But definitely the way it's presented in the Megillah, it's the exact same language is used referring to the decrees against the Jews and the solution. And it emphasizes this idea of Anafochu. So I think for that reason, Purim, even, of course, every time Jews are persecuted and then saved, there is some element of it being overturned. Purim emphasizes from the Megillah on this idea of things being overturned, and then that builds into something, right? So the whole hashkafa of Hashem, our dependence on Hashem and Hashem saving us, which we'll see a source on in a few minutes, that focuses on Purim for that reason. And all of these practices similarly build on that. So and of course, the other piece, which we saw quickly, is the idea of Mishta v'Simcha, right? Purim, the miracles all happened through these drunken parties. And that's why there's an emphasis on that as well. I think some historians have said, well, this is a Jewish version of the secular carnival, right? And this is an inappropriate way of looking at it. Now, I guess whether you agree with that or not depends on, to some degree, on whether you go with the Shla or not. And actually, there's a different Sephardic Achron I saw quoted, who says, yes, you know, some people treat Purim like a, you know, carnaval. Like, he spells it out in Hebrew letters from a couple hundred years ago. So some posts can really think that this idea in Purim comes from the outside. But I think there's it's very very reasonable to see it as this is what Purim's about. How far to go is an important question, right? Whether to do Isurim or not, whether to get out of hand. And I think the critiques of the Shla are well taken, even for those who are celebrating Purim in this way. But I think that historically that accounts for what happened. You don't need to say this is Jews just copying the carnival or something like that. Okay, other questions or comments? Yes.
Could you clarify the difference?
So I haven't reviewed these halachos recently, but I think it may have to do with the way that the shatnez is like woven together in the garment or not, if it's really, really mixed, really tied together well or not. But don't rely on me for that. I really should review these halachos. But yeah. Okay, was there another hand I saw? Okay. So we'll move now to the next category, which is what I called overturning canonical texts and ritual forms. So actually, let's jump to the next page, to page 8, before we go back to page 7, and just a few different examples of Purim parodies that we can take a look at. So we'll see on the upper right, we have Maseches Purim. There's no Talmudic tractate called Maseches Purim. What's the Talmudic tractate called? Maseches? Megillah, right? It's called Megillah, not Purim, but if you wanted to write a new Talmudic tractate that was, playing fast and loose with what Talmud is and having a little bit of fun, you might call it Maseches Purim, and from Talmud, Shikorim, okay? From Talmud, the drunk Talmud. And that was a little bit of an off-color reference. In Pirsha, I think Pirsha refers to excrement instead of Pirish Rashi. Not so nice. Vitosvos, Meruba, and a lot of additions. And then Maharsha, but he spells Maharsha not with an aleph, but with an ayin, the Maharasha, right? The evil commentator instead of the Maharsha. So this is a little edgier than some of the other material. Fine, he says all the different chidushim here. And it says at the end, Gam Hagada Leil Shikorim. Leil Shikorim is a play on what? Leil Shimurim, right? The Hagada of Leil Shikorim. So look now on the upper left. This is in a different work, the cover page of the Haggadah L'Leil Shikorim instead of the Haggadah of Leil Shimurim. Pesach playing on that. And there's a little limerick at the beginning, so I'll read and translate. Shesei ve'echol echol ushsei v'chol mach'ov lev halazrei. So drink and eat, eat and drink, and any pain of the heart, throw away. Echol ushsei shesei ve'echol ad lo seida ben yamin u'smol. Eat and drink, drink and eat until you can't tell the difference between right and left. Okay, this is like the limerick, and he calls it the simen, l'seder shel purim, right? Like the equivalent of kadesh urchatz is instead you, right, which rhymes, right? I hope everyone realizes kadesh urchatz, karpas yachatz, that's meant to rhyme, yeah? Magid rachtza, motzi matza, maroko reich, shulchan orech. So this also rhymes, except it's a little less halachic and a little more drunken party. And then he says, magbiin kos tishii, you pick up the ninth cup, which means you've already had 8 cups of wine, and you say the following, kehachamra de champagne, right, instead of, what's this a play on? Halach ma'anya, or kehalach ma'anya, like this bread of affliction, kehachamra de champagne, like this wine of champagne, de shasi avahasana, that our forefathers drank, b'chol asra v'asra, all over, everywhere. Kol detzame yesev yishne, anyone who's thirsty, come and have a drink. Kol deisle zuza b'kise yesev yizbin. Anyone who has money in their pocket, come and buy some food. Hashata hachal shaba bevesa de mishnah. Tonight we're here. Next year we'll be in the house of drinking. Hashata hachal shaba shikorin. Now we're here. Next hour will be not b'nei chorin, but shikorin. We'll all be drunk. So, you know, a little bit of raucous humor at a drinking party. I don't know how much Torah value there is in this, but we do see this idea of inverting in a parody based on the language of classical Jewish texts that people would do. One more example is what's called Sefer Chabakuk. Of course, Chabakuk is a book of Tanakh, the 12 minor prophets, short different books. But here, I think possibly because the first pasuk in Chabakuk, it's Tefillah Chabakuk Hanavi al Shigyonos. Now, shigyonos can refer to some musical instrument, but it also can refer to errors. So someone says, has Sefer Chabakuk Hanavi al shigyonos, the book of Chabakuk, the prophet with errors. And it's a whole book, it's a whole parody work based on Chabakuk, and we're not going to read through it, but there's a whole work. Was there a hand? Ah, okay, I'm sorry. Yes, thank you for noting that. Yes, Chaver Chabakuk, right? The drink. So a little bit, both the Shigyonos getting some play and Chabakuk to drink. This is another parody. Okay, let's flip back to page 7. And this is another ritual text that's going to be played with. This is the text, believe it or not, of Kiddush. So if you'll allow me, hopefully I won't mess this up too badly. You'll notice, just first to look at the layout, the right is reading different text, and then on the left column is one word that will flip, that will overturn, that almost like is like a hypertext, jumping from one text to another. I'll show you what I mean. Vayere vayvoker yom hashishi, vayichulu hashamayim misaprim kivodo, amalei olam, mishar sav shalim ze laze, ayayay sarai shtecha vayomer hineva ohel. I did it wrong. Vayomer hagmi inina me'at mayim rabim lo yuchilu lichabos es hava rabba avtanu Hashem Elokeinu chem lo gidlo v'sirocha malta aleinu l'shabeach l'adon hakol lo seiz gidula liotzer bireishis bara elukim es ha'shamayim ve'es ha'aretz v'ha'aretz ha'isa tohu bavohu v'choshech al keinika ve'lecha Hashem. Okay, so you get the idea. This is to be recited as Kiddush, and it's jumping from one well-known Jewish text that the audience knows to another based on a common word. Right, so you get up to Hashemayim, Hashemayim Misaprim Kvodo, Malei Olam, Ayei Mekom Kvodo, Ayei Sarei Shtecha, jumping back and forth with Aleinu. We're not going to go through the whole thing, you've suffered enough. But jumping just now to the end, you see it goes into Simcha Lehudim Haisa, Ora V'Simcha V'Sason Vikar, Kain Tielanu, now we're sort of in Havdalah realm, Kosi Shiros Esav, Shem HaShem Ekra, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Shehakol Kol Yaakov, Vayadayim Neisav, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Shehakol Nishma, Biveis Paro, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Shehakol Bara Lichvodo, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Shehakol Niyatid Varo, and then finally you have your drink. Of course, it's not Hagafen, it's schnapps. It's a shahakol. And that's what, this is what you do at your Kiddush Purim. I've seen this done at a Purim suda. You start, you say, we need Kiddush on Purim. You can't have a sudas Purim without Kiddush. Of course, there's no Kiddush on Purim. But for the purposes of this Kiddush, you have a pseudo Kiddush with a whole play on words, a whole text like this. And then at the end, you make a, I guess it could be a hagafen, it could be a shahakol, depending on what you're drinking. But this is playing loose and fast with the liturgical forms, with the usual text of Kiddush. There are many such versions of this. I've actually seen a couple of renditions done, and I guess if people want, they can write their own. No hard halachos in terms of how you have to do it. It's a lot of flexibility on this one. Okay, any questions or comments before we move to our final section? Okay, yes. So I was just thinking as I was preparing for this year, maybe we should adopt it. But I usually am at sudos where I'm not running the suda, so I can't quite wouldn't want to impose it on others. But that's why I imposed it on all of you. So that was the compromise. Okay. Sorry. On Simchas Torah or on Purim? On Simchas Torah. Yeah, so this is a great question, and I think some people would critique exactly what you're pointing to, this spillover, pun sort of intended, from Purim to other days, right? So some people make Simchas Torah into Purim too. We celebrate, we're supposed to have Simchas, so that doesn't just mean one shot or having a nice Suda. It means you get totally drunk, right? And this is a practice that happens. There's no real source for it, as you're indicating. And I think it's often critiqued. I think, it's a question of, we of course want to celebrate Torah, but we should celebrate Torah in an appropriate way. Purim, as we'll see in our next source, there's more room. The sources give more room to actually drinking a lot and getting drunk. A whole debate whether one should actually do that or not, but there's at least sources that point in that direction. There's no such sources for getting drunk or going beyond a nice meal with a drink or two on other Yomim Tovim. So yeah, it's a fair critique. I've actually also heard a critique when I was in yeshiva. People were dancing on Purim. People were putting people on their shoulders on Purim, on Simchas Torah, putting people on the shoulders. And the Rosh Yeshiva said, "We don't do shoulders. That's for Purim, not for Simchas Torah." Right? Just it's not meant to. You're not meant to go as far as you would on Purim on other holidays. Even if we have Simcha, it's not the same form of Simcha that we have on Purim. So it's a fair point. Yeah.
Ha ha ha.
It's a great question. We'll have to analyze the manuscript for the residue from his whatever this person was drinking. Okay, so we'll move now to the final section, a little bit back to Hashkafa, how to think about this. But we'll start with the Gemara, maybe the Gemara source that is at least somewhat responsible for this idea of parody and overturning the natural order and maybe even getting a little wild on Purim. Source 17. Amar Rava. Rava says, "Mechayiv inish lebasumei befuraya ad lo yada bein arham lebarach Mordechai." A person is obligated to get drunk. Let's assume that's what lebasumei means on Purim, until one can't tell the difference between cursed Haman and blessed Mordechai. The simple meaning of this is, be so drunk you forget the whole story. You have no idea who's good, who's bad. Everything. You're totally gone. Right. That's the simple meaning of what Rava said. We'll see interpretations in a minute. Immediately, the Gemara tells a story. Rava of Rav Zera, Avdu Sudas Purim Bahadi Adari. Rava and Rav Zera used to have Purim Suda together. Ibsum, they got drunk. Come Rava, Shachti Rav Zera. Rava got up and killed Rav Zera. As we noted, the exceptions for different halachos on Purim don't include killing. So that would be bad that Rava killed Rav Zera. Then, Lemachar, Bai Rachmei Be'achi. In the morning, he asked for mercy. He davened, and Rav Zera was resurrected. Bashana Amarle, the next year he said to him, Nasi Marvin Avitsudas Purim Hadiadadi, let's have a Purim Suda together again. Amarle, Lobachal Shata Vishata Misrachish Nisa. It's really nice. I appreciate the invitation. I don't like relying on a miracle for me to be resurrected after you kill me again, so I'm going to politely decline. So that's the Gemara. I think many of us have seen this Gemara before. How do we understand it? So again, on a simple level, it says one is supposed to get drunk on Purim to an extreme extent, right? So that's the simplest reading. There's many different interpretations. I brought a couple here. The Meiri quotes one approach that once we tell the story of Rabba and Rav Zera and how Rav Zera got killed and then didn't want to come back the next year, that undermines this original teaching. This teaching about getting drunk on Purim, that's no longer true. We don't follow that. It's no longer the halacha once we see the negative consequences that Gemara tells us right away. So we don't pass them like that. That's one possibility. Another possibility, what does it mean to not know the difference between Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai? So, you know, we have in Shoshanas Yaakov, right? Shoshanas Yaakov tells us, right, what do we have? Arur Haman Asher, right? Asher Begish Avdi, Baruch Mordechai Hayhudi. So what does it mean to not get confused between Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai? It means you have a couple drinks, you confuse the lyrics a little bit. You don't remember exactly how the song goes. Maybe that's what it means. It doesn't mean you get totally so drunk you don't know what's going on. It means to get confused enough to not remember the lyrics. Or the Magen Avraham in Source 19, that you should not be able to do the math of Arur Haman and Baruch Mordechai, which actually have the same gematria. If you add them up, maybe you'll get so confused you won't realize that. The Ramah seems to say that you should fall asleep, drink, and then sleep. If you're asleep, you don't know anything. You don't have no, your conscious mind isn't working at all, so you don't know the difference between Haman and Mordechai. So there's a lot of different approaches that try to play down this idea of drinking, and at the same time, a lot of people who take the literal meaning and actually do drink on Purim. And of course, this colors a lot of everything we've seen until now. A lot of the craziness that happens on Purim is on this basis. And of course, the idea of what's the idea behind getting drunk and not telling the difference between Haman and Mordechai, we can say this is part of our broader theme of overturning the natural order, overturning the social order, not being able to tell between the best character in the Megillah who saves the Jewish people, I don't know if he's the best, maybe Esther, hard, you know, it's a tie, and the worst character who tried to kill the Jewish people. You can't even tell the difference. Everything is so topsy-turvy, everything is so inverted, you can't tell the difference. On a simple level, that's part of the idea here. That's part of this idea of drinking until you can't tell the difference between Haman and Mordechai. But a very interesting approach from the Maharshal that's laid out nicely by Rav Yeshua Hartman's commentary on the Maharshal. And I'll read some of the Hebrew here, starting from the underline, towards the top line here in Source 20. Shesiluk haseichel, right, the point of drinking is your conscious mind goes away, right? You become less aware, less conscious. Siluk haseichel, this removal of one's mind, no'ad lehagbir es haguf legamre. That's meant to strengthen the body, right? If you have no mind, all you have is body. And in some sense, you're removing the whole person. Right? What's a person? A person is an animal's body with a mind, right? A human body is not so different than an animal's body. The difference is the mind. As soon as you remove the mind, you remove the human. By negating ourselves as Jews, we're saying the miracle of Purim happened not through Jews, not through Mordechai as a person and Esther as a person and whoever else, the Jewish army as people, but from Hashem. not through us. Because Shono, and as the Marshal says later, he's quoting, this is why we drink on Purim. Ki Hashem yisbarach hitzil osam mehaman. Hashem saved them from Haman. Bishvil she'ein adam nechshav ledavar ma. Person is nothing. Ve'ein lo ezer mitzanat. So a person can't help themselves. Only from Hashem. Ve'kevan she'ein adam nechshav ledavar ma. Kiyum she'lo hu min Hashem yisbarach. The only reason we're alive is because of Hashem. Ma'she'ein adam nechshav ledavar ma. Davar zehu mitzanat guf. That the fact that we're nothing is our bodies are nothing compared to Hashem. So on Purim you get drunk, you become just a body, and then compared to Hashem, you're nothing. And l'ficha tzarch l'vasumi b'Purim kasher hu mevusam ve'ein yodea ben arham l'baruch Mordechai az ma'adam nechshav kasher mesulak mimenu haseichel. There's nothing, right? What's the difference between Haman and Mordechai if they're both drunk? They're the same. They're just a body. They have no mind. They have no conscious self. Mekevan she'ein nechshav l'klum l'kach mitzad hazeh Hashem yisbarach mekayim u'mamid oso. What keeps us alive? What keeps us going? It's Hashem. So this is the message of Purim. Maybe not just about drinking on Purim, Aram and Baruch Mordechai, but maybe the whole idea of overturning the natural order, maybe the whole idea of the Purim story is things can look so terrible and in 1 second can get so much better. And it's not because of human action, really. It's because of Hashem pulling the strings behind the story. And Aram and Baruch Mordechai, it doesn't make a difference. We can't, I mean, obviously we have to try, but we can't really control what's happening. And it can go from Arur Haman's plans being about to be fulfilled to them being completely thwarted by Baruch Mordechai's intervention. And it's all up to Hashem. And the more that we recognize that the world as we see it, as we construct it, is easily turned over, can easily be flipped, can easily change, the more we recognize Hashem above us and Hashem in the Purim miracle. I was about to get there, so thank you. So as we're talking about this topic, and as we're thinking about Purim, we just entered Adar Hasheni, right? Adar Beis, we're Mishnichnas Adar Marbin Besimcha. It can be challenging to think about how we celebrate, how we can be so happy with so many challenges facing Klal Yisrael in the world, especially in Eretz Yisrael, especially over the past few months. And I think one way of thinking about this, as we mark Purim, as we celebrate Purim, is by celebrating Purim, we're attesting to Hashem's power in the world, to Hashem's ability to take situations that seem very difficult, that seem very problematic, and that the Yeshua's Hashem keheref ayin. Hashem can save us in the blink of an eye. And by celebrating Purim, by undermining, by inverting the natural order, the social order, the halachic order even, maybe, to some degree, we recognize Hashem's control over the world, and it's a tefillah to us, every Purim, and I'll iterate that tefillah now, that we find Yeshua, that we find salvation from all of our challenges as well, as only Hashem can save us. Everyone should have a Freilichen Purim, and we should merit to see that Yeshua.